You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrat.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up, a new program helps people gain insight into what it's like to have dementia, and that can lead to businesses that are more welcoming to people living with the disease.
First, the president of Wisconsin's Ripon College recently wrote an opinion piece published in the Washington Post, which is linked, by the way, on the Central Time Facebook page. In it, he talked about how he'll teach his political science students about the campaign of Donald Trump.
Joining us now is Zach Massetti. He's president of Ripon College, as well as a professor of politics and government. Zach, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Veronica.
Well, what made you want to write a piece for the Washington Post about how to teach Donald Trump to your students?
Well, you know, I was thinking as the semester was about to begin, and this is probably colleges all over the country are facing this, which is here you have a candidate who has really said some things that, as I wrote in the piece, might have you end up in the dean's office for not being particularly thoughtful or sensitive to your fellow classmates. How do you teach that? And in particular, how do you respect the views and the opinions of someone who may agree with him but may be very much in the minority in classroom? Because, as you know, polls show, particularly among young people, that Donald Trump is trailing significantly by as much as almost 40 percentage points.
And what did you come up with? How do you make space for a diversity of viewpoints about Donald Trump?
Well, I think the first thing is you have to, you don't necessarily as a professor check your opinions when you come into the classroom. You're not just a referee. You're there to talk about important points and things that you believe. I think you can acknowledge that this is a presidential campaign like one we've never seen before, and a candidate like one we've never seen before. That said, I think you also have to be respectful and thoughtful, and you have to listen to what young people say about why they support Donald Trump, and you have to, even when things get heated, allow for their point of view to be heard.
Right. You write that what you don't want is students who might support Trump to feel maybe that they're not being heard or that they're marginalized. You don't want them to retreat into spaces like Yik Yak, where they sound off without open dialogue. Why is that open dialogue part so important to you?
I think this idea of expanding your perspectives organically, I mean, doing it in a way where you're hearing what your classmates have to say, you're reading different points of view. I mean, one of the things that's happened in our society over the last 25 years or so is that we're really in echo chambers like we've never been before. We're listening to the same points of view that reaffirm what we already believe. And Yik Yak and comment sections off, articles like the one I wrote allow people to be incredibly angry and hateful and vitriolic without stepping up and saying, but here's who I am, right? Here's my name. Here's where I come from. Here's why I believe what I believe. And, oftentimes people get their views politically from their parents or their grandparents, and they haven't necessarily thought them through. And that cuts both ways, both left and right.
Right. I mean, we live in an era when, I don't know if politics mirrors society or society mirrors politics, but we're not in a civil era right now. So is it really even possible to create that in a classroom?
It's a great question, and to be honest, I don't know that you are, but if you can't create it in the classroom, where are you going to create it? I mean, this is in some ways still, the great polis, right? The classroom is still the place, and in college communities, particularly residential colleges, this place where you're part of a community. And the idea, I think, that Americans have to get around here in the next coming decade is, look, I may not agree with my cousin's husband or my next-door neighbor or my kid's softball coach on politics, but boy, there are some things that we do share in common. Some of those things may be political, but some of them may just be that we share a love of sports or art or music, and once you find that common ground, boy, there are lots of things that are possible. I think we've lost some of that in the country over the last couple of decades where we've lost this idea that, there are things we share in common.
We're talking with Zach Massetti right now, 13th president of Ripon College, also a professor in the Politics and Government Department, talking about his piece in the Washington Post, examining how to best teach the candidacy of Donald Trump to students come the start of the semester. And one thing you hope is that this is not something that stays confined to the halls of poli-sci, but that it goes beyond to other disciplines at the university. Why do you think that's important?
Thanks, Veronica, for asking that, because Donald Trump's candidacy to me seems in particular, although you could make the argument also about Secretary Clinton, that it's sort of tailor-made for a liberal arts college curriculum. It's really not just about political science, and I think that's part of the reason why the country seems so obsessively fascinated by this. You can look at this through the lens of history, economics, literature, certainly psychology, and the kinds of words that people are throwing around here are words that really go way beyond what you might learn in a political science class. What does it mean to have empathy? What does it mean to be narcissistic? These are really important concepts that you draw upon really from many different disciplines in order to understand them. And I think, you know, given how the country's been focused on this, and this will be true of our students and many students around the country, this is a discussion that's going to take place not just in the classroom, but in the cafeteria, probably at Friday night parties as well. And, you know, you want students to talk about it in a way where they're learning from each other.
And so a little bit earlier, you mentioned Hillary Clinton and comment sections, and I think it was in the comment section to this article, people have said, well, why aren't you, you know, exerting the same sort of lens to Hillary Clinton?
You know, again, I think there's something to be said for that you could write an article here about Secretary Clinton. What I think, though, is important to distinguish is that somehow that there's relativism between her candidacy and the candidacy of Donald Trump in terms of this particular issue of civility and civil discourse, right? There are clearly questions about Secretary Clinton's past and her history and question of how, whether she's been truthful all the way through her career, which, by the way, if you can find me a politician who has been truthful all the way through their career, I'd like to know who that person is. But there are certainly questions that you should debate about Hillary Clinton's candidacy as well. But this question of civil discourse, civility, how we treat each other in public life, how we call each other, the language we use, Donald Trump has set a different standard by design. And that, I think, promotes a certain set of challenges for educators around the country.
Aside from those words that you just mentioned, empathy and looking at language and things like that, what are the big lessons that you think this presidential race can teach us? I mean, looking at things like the media, for instance, and critical thinking, all of that.
Well, I hope, you know, I think people are starting to already think very seriously now about what our political system looks like on November 9th, and the day after the election, and what do we do? And I do hope one of the lessons that people draw from this is that there is a way to talk to each other in public that even sometimes if it sounds forced and you have to talk about my great friend from the state of South Carolina, even if you may not think that person is the great friend from South Carolina, that these conventions, these linguistic conventions are important because at the end of the day, we're all Americans and we all hopefully want what's best for our country, even if we have different means of getting there. And I think returning to this idea that it's not okay to make fun of different groups of people. It's not okay to call people stupid. And I think about it in the context really here of, you know, if some of the things that candidate Trump has called individuals, that if he would have called that about my children or any of my students here, I would have been very upset by it and thought, hey, in a public space, there's a certain civility that you have to have with people. You can say and believe whatever you want, but in a public space, you have a certain responsibility to promote a civil discourse between people to try and find the best ideas.
Now, Donald Trump has said in his candidacy that he doesn't have time to be politically correct to the letter. And you have been criticized for this piece for being part of the liberal academic elite. I mean, how would you address those charges from people who may in your class support Donald Trump, maybe other fellow staff members?
Here's my response to that is if politically correct means that I don't think you should make fun of people with disabilities in public, or I don't think you should talk about I don't think there are certain things you should say about women in a public setting, then count me in as politically correct, because I just believe that there is a fundamental civil discourse that needs to occur between people in public forum. It doesn't mean you can't say and do whatever it is you want. You certainly can, but there's a certain amount of of just basic decency you need to have with people, particularly when you're in a public setting.
And you've said in your piece that whether or not Donald Trump wins this election, that you see this as really just the beginning of this conversation, and that it has to happen not just in the classroom, but in society at large. So how do you see that playing out?
Well, I mean, again, you know, look, it looks like when you read all the polls, and I know you just had a guest on from 538 before I was on, you know, that the election certainly seems to be tilting in one direction here. And unless something dramatic happens in the next couple of months, that the next president will be Hillary Clinton. But what do we say to the 40% or whatever the number is of people that voted for Donald Trump in this election and supported him? How do those people come back into a political fold where we're working together to try and find solutions in the country? To me, that's sort of the million-dollar question for the next decade, which is there is, and there used to be in this country, a sensible middle between left and right where people came together and they didn't always get everything they wanted, but they found compromises and ended up moving the country forward. We need to figure out how to return to that space.
Zach, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you, Veronica.
That was Zach Massetti, 13th president of Ripon College and a professor in the Politics and Government Department. His Washington Post piece about how to teach Trump is linked on the Central Time Facebook page.
Coming up, a new initiative in one Wisconsin county aims to make more businesses and government agencies friendly to people with dementia. That's coming up here on Central Time.